This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Welcome to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Teresa Wilkie. The news, according to Greenability Magazine, the fastest growth in clean energy jobs is in the Midwest. More than 54,000 Missouri residents work in clean energy jobs, up 3.2% over last year, making it the fastest growing clean energy economy in the Midwest. The majority of these jobs are found in Jackson County, St. Louis County, and the city of St. Louis. The report showed Missouri's clean energy economy grew at 3.2% last year. Every Missouri county has residents working in clean energy. Clean energy employs seven times more Missouri residents than fossil fuel companies, and 72% of clean energy jobs are in construction and manufacturing. The data in this report is evidence that what makes sense for our environment also makes sense for our economy, says Bob Solger, founder and managing partner of Solar Design Studio in Platte City, Missouri. Solar, like energy efficiency and other forms of clean energy, is reducing consumers' energy costs while driving job growth and economic investment across our state. Democracy Now! Reports, a federal court in Montana has ruled that the company hoping to build the Keystone XL pipeline must conduct further environmental reviews before proceeding with construction. The ruling is the first major victory for environmentalists opposed to the pipeline since regulators approved an alternative path for it last November. The XL pipeline could carry oil from Canada's tar sands region in Alberta, Canada, to refineries as far away as the Gulf of Mexico. In a statement, Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network welcomed the ruling, saying, "The dirty tar sands crude oil that XL pipeline could transport requires far more energy to process than other sources of petroleum, and its extraction has already destroyed hundreds of thousands of boreal forests and wetlands in Alberta. We need to keep our fossil fuels in the ground and shut down extraction of highly polluting tar sands at their source." Another federal judge, this time in South Carolina, has blocked the Trump administration's rollback of Obama-era water protections. Last Thursday's ruling by a district court judge reinstates the Clean Water Rule, the implementation of which was delayed by the Environmental Protection Agency last June. The Clean Water Rule sets drinking water safeguards while offering federal protection to wetlands and thousands of streams that flow into larger rivers and lakes. In the Philippines, crews battled against a literal wave of garbage as flooding brought plastic bottles and other refuse into the streets of the capital, Manila, Thursday, following heavy rains last weekend.
And thank you very much, Teresa, for that news. My name is Mike Murphy. We'll be bringing you our guest from the Heartland Conservation Alliance in just a minute. But first, I want to read this press release just came out today from the EPA. Contact press at epa.gov. EPA, which is Environmental Protection Agency, to hold final PFAS community engagement in Leavenworth, Kansas. Now, PFAS is per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which we'll go back to the press release. On Wednesday, September 5th, 2018, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency will hold its final 2018 PFAS Community Engagement Event in Leavenworth, Kansas. This event will allow EPA to provide important information to the public on the agency's PFAS actions and to hear directly from heartland communities, states, local governments, and tribes about their experience with PFAS. Leavenworth PFAS Community Engagement. When? Wednesday, September 5th. Working session begins at 1 p.m. Listening session begins at 3:30 p.m. Where? Riverfront Community Center, 123 South Esplanade, Leavenworth, Kansas. The Kansas Community Engagement event will consist of two sessions, a public listening session and a PFAS working session. Both sessions are open to the public and press. If you are interested in attending, register at epa.gov/PFAS/forms. And there's more, but it's too much to read on the radio. Those interested in speaking should select the option to speak while registering. For more information regarding this event, go to epa.gov/PFAS. That's P-F-A-S. And the EPA has made addressing PFAS a priority, and EPA is moving expeditiously on the following actions. One, EPA will initiate steps to evaluate the need for a maximum contaminant level for PFOA and PFOS. We will convene our federal partners and examine everything we know about PFOA and PFOS in drinking water. EPA beginning the necessary step two. EPA is beginning the necessary steps to propose designating PFOA and PFOS as hazardous substances through one of the available statutory mechanisms, including potentially CERCLA Section 2. Step 3, EPA is currently developing groundwater cleanup recommendations for PFOA and PFOS. At contaminated sites and will complete the task by fall of this year. EPA is taking action in close collaboration with our federal and state partners to develop toxicity values for Gen X and PFBAs by the summer. And then just the background, before I go into the background. Throughout the summer, EPA has conducted similar engagements with communities impacted by PFAS. For each engagement, EPA coordinated closely with the states and local communities to plan and select each of the PFAS community engagement events. Community engagements have been held in Exeter, New Hampshire, Horsham, Pennsylvania, Colorado Springs, Colorado, Fayetteville, North Carolina, and now Leavenworth, Kansas. The EPA also engaged with tribal representatives at the Tribal Lands and Environmental Forum in Spokane, Washington on August 15th to ensure that everyone who would like to provide input to the EPA has the opportunity to do so. The agency has opened a docket for input from the public and will be accepting comments until September 28th. Comments may be submitted. This link will be posted on Eco Radio's Facebook page, because it's a difficult one to translate over the radio. The community engagement events and the input the agency has received throughout the docket thus far have been incredibly informative and will be used along with perspectives from the National Leadership Summit to develop a PFAS management plan for release later this year. So far, all these events, EPA has engaged with almost 1,000 individuals, including more than 150 who delivered remarks about their personal experiences in their community. The agency has also received over 60,000 comments through the docket. To ensure the agency is able to consider all of the input that has been and will be submitted, the docket will remain open through September 28, 2018. After September, EPA will consider all of the information submitted as the agency works expeditiously to identify and take actions that will help states, tribes, and local communities to address challenges associated with PFAS. And PFAS, again, is per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances that are affecting water. And you can find out more at epa.gov/PFAS. So that was, again, a press release that came out today from the Environmental Protection Agency. And again, it's posted on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. But now we're going to turn our attention to the Heartland Conservation Alliance. And I have Ayanna Curran-House here in the studio and Jill Erickson on the phone. So good evening to both of you.
Hello.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mike. Thanks. Hello, good evening. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks. Thank you so much. We appreciate your checking in with us because you guys do a lot of great work here in the area, and we're going to we need to make sure people are aware of what you're doing. So, Ayanna, maybe you could tell me, what is Heartland Conservation Alliance and how long have they been around? And
sure. So we were founded in 2012 by a group of urban, suburban, and rural stakeholders, and they came together to really serve as an alliance for all the work that's going on throughout the Kansas City area and get some of the plans that were put on the shelf back into play and work throughout the Blue River watershed to convene all of our partners so we're working together, connect communities that are living in the Blue River watershed, and especially in the areas that are surrounding the Blue River to the Blue River and all their green spaces, and then conserve lots of green spaces throughout Kansas City. So that's really how we got started and a little bit about our mission.
Well, that's great. And so how long have you been with the organization?
I have been serving as an AmeriCorps Vista with HCA for about a year now, and I'm officially on contract as an employee.
Well, congratulations. That's great. That's wonderful. Tell us about some of the things Heartland Conservation Alliance, maybe some things that have been done in the past, and then we'll drill down to what we've got going on today.
Sure. So we have our Green Guard Stewardship Program, which we've had for a couple of years now, that works with communities to develop curriculum that will help them and empower them to restore natural areas in their own community. And these can be vacant lots. We've also worked with the Missouri Department of Conservation's TRIM grant. We've worked in forest patches on different school properties, and these are really important because schools are a landowner themselves. So we work with the students there to take ownership of the land, the natural areas that are accessible to these students, in restoring them, removing a bunch of invasive species, using it as an outdoor classroom, which the students don't usually get to do. So we're trying to bring that back into the schools. We've also worked with communities like Seven Oaks to do vacant lot restoration and just share information about how to acquire land bank homes, and now they're off doing their own thing and restoring a bunch of vacant lots on their own, and have a really great, strong neighborhood organization that does that. All their board members took our Green Guard Stewardship Program a couple years back. So that's a little bit about one of our programs. We also have a youth council. This last year was our first year with them. And this is a group of 10 to 15 youth aged 14 to 24 that work on their own projects. They work with us to develop their priorities, and then throughout their year-long term, we provide them the resources and guidance, and allow them to participate in different professional development so that they can get these projects done and really get exposure to all of the different career paths in conservation, and attend professional meetings and things like that so that they can become the next conservation leaders.
So what are the career paths in conservation?
So there are a lot of career paths within, you know, you can go into parks, you can go work at the water department and do environmental education. You can, you know, become an engineer. You could go out and do things more like horticulture, that you're spending your days outside. So we try, through our Green Guard Stewardship Program, try to expose these stewards who are 14 and up, so that can be a range of ages in these classes, expose them to all these different careers. You know, maybe they don't necessarily consider themselves an outdoor person that loves nature, but they can still come and attend the classes and learn that they can have a positive impact on nature through, you know, even sitting behind a computer screen. I spend a lot of my time doing that. But
Wow. So how is this program working out, you think?
It's working really well. We've had some great successes with students coming back and wanting to get involved in other ways. A couple of students from our Green Guard program were in the past youth council and are going to be in this upcoming youth council, so taking on more responsibility and ownership, you know, not just attending a class and taking in information, but actually wanting to go out and do their own projects now. So I'm really glad that we can provide them the opportunity past the Green Guard class to do that.
That's good. It sounds like that sounds like a good measure of success right there, that you're engaging these folks enough to want to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Jill, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we've been excited about with the work that we do in conservation in the Kansas City Metro is through the partnerships that we build and through our alliance members, we can leverage things like this Green Guard Stewardship Program. At East High School, where we piloted the project a couple years ago, we are now seeing that our connections there and the students working there have brought other projects to that forest patch that Ayanna mentioned. So the Kansas City Water Department is looking to put in a green infrastructure project there. And so think of green infrastructure like gray infrastructure is the pipes underground managing water. Green is a healthier, more natural way to manage stormwater. So they're looking at putting in some green infrastructure that will help hold the rainwater there on the site and restoring some ponds. We've also had some interest in other nonprofit organizations helping with getting biking going at the school and looking at that 13 acres of school property and having trails in addition to the outdoor classroom. So it just kind of shows that when it's like a ripple in a pond, when you drop that stone, more things start happening. And just to underline what Ayanna was talking about with that neighborhood, Seven Oaks, they purchased those four vacant lots and they are growing food and they have a butterfly garden and it's become a really vibrant community space. And other organizations are leaning in. We provided some training for the stewardship, but organizations like the Blue River Watershed Association have really been involved in that neighborhood and doing cleanups and outreach and education. So it's I think it's a testimony of how much communities want to be stewards, and they want to take care of their neighborhoods, and they know these beautiful places. They just need some resources. They just need a little education. They just need some support. And we get really energized and excited when we're working in communities like Blue Valley Neighborhood and Marlboro Neighborhood. It's really exciting and energizing, especially with the news these days, to see people pulling tires out of the river, people cleaning up vacant lots, and really caring for the places that matter to them.
Yeah, I understand there's an annual Blue River cleanup where they fill up a tractor trailer with tires that were dumped in the river.
Yeah, that is an event that's hosted by Lakeside Nature Center,
right?
Stream Team Number 175, and they've been doing that cleanup in the spring for more than 25 years, and they generally get about 1,000 people that come out and help clean up the river. And we've been really honored to lead some teams in the last couple of years. We work on a site near the stadium that the city owns called the Municipal Farm along Coal Mine Road. If anybody out there knows where Elsie's Barbecue is, it's in that neighborhood. So we've participated by being a leader and having teams clean up the river down there by that project.
That's great. Well, I want to find out more about what's going on with the Blue River, but we're gonna take our first break. And also, if anyone's interested in calling in and joining in on the conversation, you're welcome to do that. Here's Richard Mabian to tell us how.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Support for KKFI provided by City of Fountain School, providing educational and community building opportunities in the Kansas City Metro, offering programs for parent toddler groups, kindergarten, grades 1 through 5, and a homeschool enrichment group, grades 1 through 8. Curriculum includes music, art, movement, games, gardening, foreign language, and handwork classes. Now enrolling for the 2018-19 school year. More information at cityoffountainschool.org.
Hi, all. This is Leslie Pories, Vice President of the Board here at KKFI. I want you to consider becoming an active member here at the station. Active members are the people who volunteer an average of 4 hours a month. And when you become an active member, you have a vote on all the major decisions of the station. Community radio at its best. We only fulfill our mission of serving the community when it reflects your voice. Come on down and get involved.
Grass carp putting down roots. On this current cast. There are extensive efforts underway to keep invasive Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. But one variety has already been popping up there for over 30 years. For decades, people have used sterilized grass carp to control pond vegetation. Over time, some of those fish have escaped to the Great Lakes. Because they could not reproduce, it was not a major cause for concern. But John Detmers of the Great Lakes Fishery Commission says there's been an ominous change.
Reproducing grass carp have been found in the last 5 years in Lake Erie.
That's alarming because a growing population of the voracious plant eaters could do tremendous damage to aquatic plants and fish habitat. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And welcome back to Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name's Mike Murphy, and we've got some folks with the Heartland Conservation Alliance. Ayanna Curran-Howes is here in the studio, and Jill Erickson is on the phone. And once again, thanks, folks, for being here. So there's a lot going on with the Blue River, isn't there?
There is. You know, it's a lot of people. We were just out at the Ethnic Festival this weekend touting what a beautiful asset this is to our community. And many people are not aware of the Blue River. They don't know where it is. And so a big part of our work and our mission with our alliance members is a campaign that we have underway. We call it Renew the Blue. And you can see a little bit more about that on a website called joinrenewtheblue.org. And that is a unified messaging campaign, really just to let people know that they have this river in their community. We talked to about 500 people this weekend at our booth at the festival. And I would say of those people, and many of them were children, I would say maybe 25 people knew where the Blue River was.
Wow. Wow. And so for those of our listeners who don't know where the Blue River is, what are the basic parameters?
So it starts...
Well, yeah, you go ahead, Ayanna.
It starts over at the Overland Park Arboretum, and it's 42 miles long, and it goes up through Martin City and most of Kansas City, going through the Swope Park and past the zoo, through the zoo, and then deposits into the Missouri River. So there's lots of active restoration projects and trails right along the river, and that map is accessible on the Mid-America Regional Council website.
Which is marc.org. That's right. And so tell us more about this Renew the Blue.
So it's really a unified way for us and all of our partners to talk about all the different things that are happening in the watershed, and to show the public in a collective way who all is working in the watershed and working to restore the Blue River so that they can get out and volunteer and know about all these ways that they can access trails and different activities along the Blue River.
We started the campaign about 2 years ago, and we got a lot of support from an organization that Heartland Conservation Alliance and Mid-America Regional Council together serve as an ambassador for, and it is something called the Urban Waters Federal Partnership. Mm. There are 19 urban waters locations across the United States, and Kansas City is proud to boast we are home to one of them. And essentially what these projects are across the U.S., this was an initiative started at the federal level. EPA got it started. And they said, you know, we work in silos, and they recognize that. But they also recognize they have some really great resources, both funding and research and staff, all working on different aspects of waterways in our cities, and really understanding that, just like in Kansas City, our Blue River is at the heart of our community and so much of a part of how the city has developed and how it has evolved. And if we can revitalize these watersheds and revitalize these rivers, essentially we are revitalizing communities. So there's just been a lot of effort since about 2009, 2011, and this idea has really caught on, and EPA has worked really hard to fund projects across the country. We have been really fortunate to receive 3 different grants from EPA, even in these days and times, to support this work, and that's how much they really believe in this work. So through the Urban Waters Steering Committee, we created this logo and this imagery, and we worked with all of our alliance members to come up with this slogan, if you will, as Ayanna was saying, because some of us are planting trees, like Heartland Tree Alliance. Some of us, like KC Water, are in the schools teaching children about stormwater and the journey to the sea. Some of us are picking up trash, like we mentioned earlier. But really, all of these efforts together will renew the blue. And if we don't work together, we will not move the needle. We'll just continue to make some of the same mistakes that we've made in the past about the way that we develop, and we really need to move forward. We need everybody at the table, and we need everybody renewing the blue.
So did you want to add something to that, Diana?
I was just going to say, so when you're out and cleaning up trash or planting a tree, use hashtag renew the blue.
All right. Hashtag renew the blue. So I want to talk about maybe some of the challenges facing the Blue River. And I'm going to name a couple, and you can, you know, expound on this and, of course, add to some of these. So some of it is pollution coming in to the Blue River from a combination of development and agricultural runoff, maybe on the Kansas side, and plus just regular lawn-type pollution. Not only coming in via the Blue River, but also via Indian Creek, which comes into the Blue River at some point as well. There's also the fact that the Blue River runs very close to the old Kansas City weapons plant, which also includes an old dump landfill on that land that the Blue River runs very, very close to. And of course, there's been issues like the EPA went after the city of Kansas City about the quality of the water. I think having to do with the dual system sewer.
Yeah, combined thing. Sewer.
And mm-hmm. then, of course, you know, we talked mentioned earlier about the Friends of Lakeside Nature Center cleaning up a truckload of tires every year. Well, that means a truckload of tires is being dumped every year, right? And so those are some of the challenges. Are there others, or do you want to expound on some of those I mentioned?
Those are some of the. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just say that those really are the key threats that face the river. The non-point source pollution, so that's the guy in the car in front of you that flicks his cigarette out the window, or the person who thinks that they can, you know, clean out grandma's garage and just drive it over to some dark corner and dump it. Those are the kinds of pollution that the river suffers, as well as that point source pollution. The city of Kansas City is under a consent decree. They've got some time to get that repaired and not dump raw sewage into the river. So they are working on that. And we do have some legacy pollutants, like you mentioned, the Bannister complex. So when you have a river that runs through an urban area like ours, you have all sorts of pollutants, and it's a complex issue. And I, you know, the one I would add is the one that I mentioned, is that it's invisible.
Yes.
One of the things that we are working on, Heartland Conservation Alliance, along with several of our alliance members, is we're producing a documentary about the river. We're working with English Landing Films. We're in production right now. And we want to create a film that tells the story of the river. To help people understand its beauty and what it has to offer our community. Because if people don't know that it's there, they're not going to fight for it. They're not going to care for it. They're not going to enjoy it.
Is the Blue River navigable to any extent, like canoeable or...
It is. We recommend, you know, if you are going to be in the river, that you are accessing the river above where those outfalls are with the combined sewers. So we canoed it last June, and we put in, the Missouri Department of Conservation has a boat launch. It's the only boat launch along the river. At their park there off of Blue Ridge Boulevard, and floated down to Minor Park. And we went on a day that there had not been very much rain. We'd been watching the USGS gauges, and we did have to portage. We did have to pick the boats up, the kayaks and boats up a little bit in some of the rocky areas. But it was a lovely float. And I know there's many more people out in the community that do get on the river more than I've had experience, and maybe some of those folks will call in and share their experiences. We would love to see more people canoeing the Blue.
Interesting. Well, again, if anyone wants to join in this conversation, the number is 816-931-5534. So about a year ago at this time, I took a walk. I went to not far from the Bannister Federal Complex, where the Indian Creek flows into the Blue River, and there's a little trail you can go along there. And this was, if you remember, a year ago, we had two extremely heavy rainfalls and a third, you know, very heavy, and within several weeks of each other. And I went there several days after the first big flood that we had last year. And some of that trail there is like 10 feet above the water, you know, where the pedestrian area is. And I was struck by the trees, even though 10 feet above, the leaves were all muddy. Like the river must have risen that high when it had really flooded, or I don't know, or maybe it's just a lot of splash, but I was really shocked about that. I'm just curious, is too much water in that river an issue, or not enough water in that river an issue to be concerned?
Flooding has always been an issue with the Blue River. In fact, 40-some years ago, Congress appropriated funds to the Corps of Engineers to channelize the lower reaches of the Blue River, because at that time we had companies like AK Steel up and running, and they demanded that the Corps of Engineers take action to stop the flooding, because, of course, we've lost lives in flooding along Brush Creek and Blue River, and millions
Creek.
Of dollars of damage to businesses and loss of businesses. My understanding, and I am not a water engineer, but my understanding is that when we talk about the river, many people think about the channel, the little ribbon of blue or brown water, and the reality is a river is much wider and broader than that. And that's why a lot of us talk about the watershed. So it's the land that reaches out on both the banks, you know, for hundreds of feet, even miles. And rivers need to flood. They fill up, and the rainwater fills them up, and they need, all that water has to have a place to go. But in cities and urban areas, think of our rooftops, our roads, our parking lots, every patch of concrete, when the rain hits that, it runs off, and it runs off very quickly. Of course, it picks up all the trash that's there, too. So when you think about how our city is growing and developing, and we keep moving south, we're marching up along the banks of the river. And like at Indian Creek, where Coaches is situated and the flooding that we had last summer, and those businesses are closed now. Think about the trail you're talking about. Think about the businesses. The parking lots filled with cars, they go right up to the banks of the river. There is nowhere for the water to go.
Jill,
that causes a lot of flooding.
We do have a caller that joined us. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Mike. This is Brent from Tonganoxie, Kansas.
Hey, Brent. What's on your mind?
Hey, good show tonight. This is really good information about a group I wasn't aware of. So it's really exciting to me, and it would be to my wife also, to hear about a program that's educating kids to be excited about nature. So we have, my wife got to retire a couple of years ago, and she's doing
off of our property that is native plant nursery kind of stuff. So she's got like 80 different species of native plants that she sells. And our real mission isn't about making money. It's really about instilling a sense of love of nature, you know, into kids. And so we are just looking for any opportunity that we could partner with groups like the Heartland Conservation Alliance to maybe get some kids onto our property to learn some things. So just wanted to throw that out.
Well, thank you. That's great. You guys have any comments about that?
Yeah, just wonderful. Thank you for what you're doing. And maybe we can have a conversation offline about you getting to come and talk to some of the communities, or us coming out there to see what you all are doing.
Yeah, Brent raises an interesting point. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can go. All our contact information is on our website at heartlandconservationalliance.org. We also have a very active Facebook page that we respond to.
Okay. We're going to take our second break, and we'll be back in just a minute or so. And again, there's still time to join in the conversation, 816-931-5534.
Thanks for tuning in to KKFI. The future is here. Simply tell your smart speaker, play KKFI. If you haven't already, give it a shot. KKFI can be wherever you are.
What's that sound, you ask?
It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A stately brick mansion built before the Civil War is getting a 21st century update. Solar panels. Last year, the city of Roswell, Georgia purchased Mimosa Hall, a 6,000-square-foot Greek Revival home built in 1841.
We came up with the idea of putting a solar roof on the property as a way to help the city offset the cost of electricity, so the citizens of Roswell don't have to pay for it themselves.
Steve Gibson is with Friends of Mimosa Hall and Gardens, a nonprofit that supports the preservation of the property. He says the solar panels will generate all the electricity the mansion needs, and batteries will store excess energy for use at night and during cloudy days. Donations and tax credits will help pay for the system, and once installed, the solar panels should save the city more than $5,000 a year. Gibson says Mimosa Hall will demonstrate that clean energy is a modern way to help preserve treasures of the past.
We're hoping to set a new standard for solar use in all kinds of different environments, even in an environment like an historical home. And we really want to build on the momentum that solar energy has today.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, here we are back on the air. Ayanna and Jill still hanging with us. Thank you guys so much for being here and all the fine work you're doing and making people aware of what you're doing. So this is wonderful. We're glad you're able to participate.
Oh, we're glad to be here and share some of this good work.
Yeah,
yes, thank you.
It sure does sound like good work. Mm-hmm. So just a little bit more on the Blue River. We talked a little bit about, like, you gave the example of coaches and those businesses over there being close to the Indian Creek. Is there development that is taking place or being planned for anywhere near the Blue River?
There is. There's a lot of development pressure south of that. So for listeners, if you're not aware, that's roughly 99th and Holmes on the Kansas City, Missouri side. The river flows from Kansas. 60% of the watershed is on the Johnson County, Kansas side, and 40% of the watershed. The watershed's about 235 square miles, and so 40%. And so we're downstream when we're sitting at the at our office or at the radio station. There's a lot of new development happening upstream in Johnson County. A lot of land is being sold and platted, and it's being turned from rural to more peri-urban and suburban. So there's a lot of development pressure. And the hope is not that we would stop building, but the hope is that because we understand, like the caller was pointing out, the importance of native plants, the way that we build is so important. And so we do education with children at a festival like we did this weekend. We're teaching teenagers how to be stewards. But we also have to be educating our developers and our elected officials to understand how important it is that we build smart. And there's so much information out there, and the city and both sides of the state line are taking great strides to being smarter cities. We have to keep that conversation going. And just to tie two things together, we were talking about the flooding and the development and the impervious surfaces like concrete. What rivers need is healthy vegetation. They need healthy, the land next to the rivers needs to be planted with plants that evolved here in Missouri. So that's what we call native plants, things that the wildlife can benefit from. And in the long run, it's a cost saving. So instead of paying to repair the damage for flooding, it's much wiser and smarter to pay up front for the conservation and having those buffers on all of our streams and all of our rivers, and make sure that we have these beautiful parks like the Blue River Parkway, where we can have trails and people can watch birds and kids can get out on their bikes, rather than having a concrete pad right up to the edge of the river. So that's kind of the pressure, and that's just a wonderful multi-benefit for the community to think about developing and growing more smart.
Does the Blue River have any challenges with invasive species of any kinds?
Yeah, definitely. There's obviously a lot of honeysuckle everywhere we go in Kansas City, Missouri. And then some others are along the watershed. One thing I was just going to add is that with communities that we mentioned, a couple that we were in, Marlboro, right on the banks of the river, that's why we're strategically choosing areas and communities that are along the Blue River, so that we're fostering stewardship and knowledge of how the built environment around them impacts later events like flooding. Mm. And so how they, empowering them and showing them how they can, even in their own yard, help to add green infrastructure, plant natives versus, you know, the ornamental honeysuckles that are not as good for the environment.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
And there's, let me add one more thing if I can. Thank you. Again, to the caller's point, he was wondering where to connect with the community. We've mentioned several of our alliance members, but one of them that is in the spotlight right now is the Kansas City Native Plant Initiative. And that's a wonderful website and a wonderful resource. It's also a coalition of conservation-minded entities, and they are working to share the importance of natives, but they're also offering workshops and trainings, just a wealth of information and some amazing experts. Many of them come to some of our Green Guard classes and teach, and some of them help us with some of our restoration projects and identifying those invasive species, helping communities see where we could replace the quote-unquote bad plants with the good plants. So it's just another great resource for your listeners.
Okay. Was there anything else we needed to say about the Blue River? Is there something we missed?
Well, do we have like two more hours? There are so many stories. That's another reason that we're working on this film, is that it's exciting to hear the community share the how much they love this river. It certainly has its challenges, but it's a beautiful asset. And we love to hear when people tell us about the trail they rode on and the rope swing and taking their dogs on the trail. So it's a beautiful place, and there's probably 1,000,002 stories.
I'm sure. We do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Charles Ferry. I'm calling from like Midtown, Kansas City.
Okay, Charles.
Okay. My thing that bothers me is all the waste you see. I mean, other cities, like states like California, plastic can be recycled. You have people with shopping carts full of plastic, you know, paper. I don't understand why here we can't have come up with some way of recycling this stuff that's meaningful. People that are homeless, trying to make a dollar a day or something, you wouldn't have as much waste to throw in the river if we had waste. Beer bottles, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even take bottles back to the store and get deposit, and, you know, they it's crazy. We just throw away everything. It's crazy.
Hear, hear. Amen.
I don't know who you would talk to and try to hammer some sense into them. Just have this where people can scrap it up and take it out and sell it, you know, to a salvage company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that point. That's you're not the first one to make that point on this program. Yeah. So I appreciate
it. It makes me sick because I'm in the remodeling, plumbing, you know, business and stuff. And some of the empty houses, vacant houses, you go in, man, it's terrible.
Yeah.
You need two or three dumpsters just to get all that stuff out of there. Where did it go?
I know. All right, sir. Well, we've only got a couple minutes left, so I've got to wrap up with our guests. But thank you so much for your call.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you too. So there's no time for any more calls. We just got a couple minutes left. What do you guys want to make sure you get out there to our listeners?
Right. So along the Blue River, Blue River Parkway, there's Alex George Lake, and we are going to be out there this fall on October 13th. With a rain date of November 5th, working to restore the wetlands out there. So it's currently a lake that is at the end of its life, and we're going to restore it to a wetland, and wetlands provide a lot of habitat for developing wildlife and act as a biofilter. So we're really excited about that project along the Blue River. And then we'll also be having our Green Guard Stewardship class in a couple of different communities this fall over in Marlboro and then over in Blue Valley at East High School, again. And both of those classes are going to start mid-September. So if anyone is interested, you can head to our website, heartlandconservationalliance.org/stewardship to sign up or learn more about the classes.
Okay. Jill, thank you so much for all you do and for checking in, and same to you, Ayanna. It seems like you're really enjoying what you're doing, so that's great. So
thank you.
Yeah, again, thanks again, and we should try and have you folks on more frequently, so we'll work to do that.
Wonderful. We would love that, Mike. Thanks, thank you so much, and thank you, Richard.
Yes, thank
all right,
you.
Take care.
All take right. care.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to go with our calendar and then World Ocean Radio and then Fiesta Musical will be on the air.
Now the calendar of events for the week of August 20. On August 22nd at 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., the University of Missouri Platte County will offer a series of free Grow Your Farm classes to address several aspects of farm startup, including farm equipment, real estate property, farm grants, and added value products. Classes will be held on Wednesday evenings. August 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Best Conference Center, KU Edwards Campus, 12600 Quivira Road, Overland Park, the Climate Energy Project invites us all to attend a public hearing for Kansas City Power and Light customers about proposed rate changes, some of which could have positive outcome for clean energy, but which might discourage homeowners from choosing solar power to power their homes. Also on August 23rd, at the Kansas Public Library, 7th in Vermont, Lawrence, Kansas, there's a free event sponsored by Grassland Heritage Foundation, a Native Plant Garden Workshop. On August 25th, you can have a free guided walk to explore the Buck Creek Wildlife Area. Approximate parking location address is along the east side of Buck Creek Road, north of 35th Street, at approximately 3900 Buck Creek Road, Oskaloosa, Kansas. Saturday, September 8th, thousands of Rise for Climate rallies and marches will be held around the world. Each of these events will be calling local leaders to commit to building a fossil-free world that puts people and justice before profits. In the Metro KC area, 350 KC and the Sustainability Sanctuary Coalition are co-sponsoring a Rise for Climate march through downtown Overland Park. They'll meet at 8126 Marty at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Marchers will call on Johnson County and all municipalities in that county to commit to building a 100% clean energy future. Check Facebook for Rise for Climate events in your area. That will be Saturday, September the 8th. On Tuesday, September 11th, the Kansas Sierra Club Topeka Group invite you to hear speaker Judy Scherf, Washburn University biology professor at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, 4775 Southwest 21st in Topeka, Kansas, at 7 p.m. She'll talk about the oceans, how oceans affect the climate, and the consequences of human interaction with the oceans and marine biology.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. We think of ourselves as literate people. We put full value on education, our ability to read and write, to analyze and distill from history as experience, archive, memoir, and material things toward a more complete understanding of where we live, how we live, and what we live for. We are social beings. Our stories are narratives of human interactions among ourselves over time and with nature as source of substance and sustenance for what we call civilization. To know is to observe, to organize our observations, and to apply that knowledge as invention, exchange, and communication. This latter is so important. Are we truly knowledgeable if we are unable to communicate what we know? Literacy is functional communication in the form of words, equations, visualizations, and songs. We are literate when all our senses are applied as interpretive response to the course of human events. Key to that response is engagement with the natural world, and the ocean represents 71% of that world in its most literal iteration. We cultivate the surface layers of the land as agriculture, manufacture, extraction, and settlement. We claim to know a lot about that scape, but not enough to protect it from the consequence of our exploitation. As a result, the land approaches exhaustion, not so much a garden as a refuge, not so much a place for abundance as a wasteland of our irresponsible consumption. We approach a point when we must not tolerate the perpetuation of this situation, the values, structures, and behaviors that clearly inhibit the probability of survival. This may seem melodramatic to say, but I don't think so. As we face the consequence of our history, we are faced with choice. What will it take to redress and reverse the vectors of decline? What will it take to address and advance the vectors of change? The odds are high and long. Literate people the world over must now apply their knowledge, their understanding, and their energy toward plausible scenarios for alternative futures. That future, in our view, depends on the ocean. The subject, then, of an ensuing series is ocean literacy, an anthology of reflections, examples, illustrations, and demonstrations that represent the best responses to the challenges we face. The work we describe here is based on the efforts of a group of ocean experts and educators to outline a curriculum intended to instill inside and outside formal classrooms a full understanding of what the ocean means for our living, for all aspects of the wellness and welfare of ourselves and our communities. While the focus is on comprehensive ocean science, the curriculum transcends the usual natural resource perimeters of such study to relate the ocean to climate, fresh water, food, energy, health, work, trade, transportation, finance, community development, and cultural traditions. The essential principles of this ocean literacy curriculum are as follows. 1. The Earth has one big ocean with many features. 2. The ocean and life in the ocean shape the features of Earth. 3. The ocean is a major influence on weather and climate. 4. The ocean made Earth habitable. 5. The ocean supports a great diversity of life and ecosystems. 6. The ocean and humans are inextricably interconnected. 7. The ocean is largely unexplored. These perspectives will serve as a framework for a catalog of the most innovative ideas for our ocean future that we can find and present to you here. Taken together, we hope they will serve as a communication tool as we build together a global community of citizens of the ocean who will serve as agents for change and sustainability of the sea that connects all things. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.